Last time, on Encounter Party! Without a cleric, Perix found himself near death, if not for the aid of an Orzhov stranger. Now indebted to the knight, our players sought the last living patron of the unaffiliated line. What secrets does he hold, and what is the true motive of this brutish debt collector? Find out this week on Encounter Party!
So, the tenuous situation continues as somebody very clearly attempted to come and kill Cyril Montjoy.
Who are these men and why would they want you dead?
I have absolutely no idea as to why they would want me dead. Well, I can think of a lot of reasons why someone would want me dead, but if they are specifically targeting the three of us, it's clear that they have machinations against our rail line.
So, there is something that we can learn from this encounter. If Montjoy is convinced that these people are trying to rub him out to take control of the unaffiliated rail line, it stands to reason that there aren't any highly entrenched conspirators that were a part of Malphus Reed's original plot. So they're trying to supplant the major investors and then work their way down.
So it is, I think you are of the impression that to the investors, the money behind the unaffiliated line, that if they are taken out, they aren't protected by the Guild Pact.
Right.
So anyone can come and rub them out, and then the money is gone and the unaffiliated line collapses.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, where
which would be fine for us. That would stop the thing, right?
Which is why I think that it has to have something to do with the conspiracy itself. Because if you just take over and then you start funneling the money that they already have from whatever other operations, and they use that to ensure the progress of the unaffiliated line according to the design of the spell, they know it's going to go off without a hitch. Rather than have some outside money come in or some rando off the street influence their decision and work in a more cost-effective solution that messes up the spell permanently.
Yeah, Ned, the problem with your particular logic is that if these guys are rubbed out in the way that we're imagining, and then the money stops and the line stops, that's good for you, but that's bad for the conspirators. Because the conspirators,
yes, that's
don't
right,
want the line to stop.
My logic,
according to your current
line, my logic thinking, stops at we're trying to stop the spell. If the train line stops, nailed it. That's where my logic line is over.
Great.
That's all.
Stop the spell from getting written.
Stop the spell from arriving. Great way to do that. Stop. I'm not
going to what the spell does.
Yeah. Could give puppies to Ravnica.
Don't know what the spell does, but the way they're going about it seems rather dirty.
Lorzach will ask Mr. Montjoy, who else has tried to purchase the rail line from under you?
No one has tried to purchase the rail line from under us. We get assaults and bully tactics all the time.
Why do you think they're coming after you, and who do you think they are?
Yeah, obviously, the guilds are behind it. If they rub us out, then our line fails, and their rail lines can succeed in this silly rail war. You have to keep in mind that we only started our line in defense against the Ravnican guilds in the first place. Do you think I really want to commit my legacy and my time and money to creating public transportation?
Did you have a relationship with Malphus Reed at all?
I have no idea who that man is.
Can I roll insight to see if that was a lie?
Yes.
That's a 21.
He's giving you a fib.
This would save all of us so much time, and possibly your life, if you wouldn't lie to us. Obviously, we're not here to kill you. It's in your best interest to give us the information we need so we can move on.
That's going to require some intimidation.
Oh, you know what I'm really good
at? I'm just saying, like, if you want help with that.
David would love help. The collector says, fuck no.
Okay.
But if he fails...
I don't think a 24 is going to fail.
Oh, look...
The situation with Malphus Reed is a little bit tenuous. I won't pretend like everything is above board, but the man wasn't exactly above board himself. We made a few back-end deals for steel, and how do you think we could possibly have achieved train technology without the help of the Izzet?
And what were those deals?
He was like ordering steel through a back end. He was relying on some Izzet resources to help combat the line.
But in return for money, were you paying him? Did you have to offer him favors? What was the quid pro quo?
He paid them.
Was paid.
He paid them.
I'd ask him, what about Merit Lage?
What is a Merit Lage?
Is he lying?
20.
With like a 20-something.
He has no idea what that is.
Oh, okay. I'm surprised one of your stature doesn't know.
Look, I'm just trying not to die here today, okay? Some back alley deals were made with Mr. Malphus Reed, and we got a bit of consultation on train construction. I think he was just hedging his bets, because either we would have succeeded or the Izzet would have conceded. And if one of the other guilds were to have won the rail war, then they get the monopoly because of the guild pact. But if he spent some time helping us, we're independent of that. We can still operate in independence of the guild pact.
Who is in charge of plotting the unaffiliated line? How is its path chosen?
We have a team of engineers. We have a lead engineer who's working on this.
And who is the lead engineer? What's the name?
Yeah, we were interrupted by the...
It's a rather uppity Vidalkin engineer by the name of Halem Ward.
Associated with any guild?
No, independent.
Didn't it strike you as odd that the leader of the Izzet Guild was still helping you with this unaffiliated? I mean, and these back channels, you didn't question Malphus Reed's
motives? No. What he's trying to insinuate is that the way that he engaged with Malphus Reed is that he thought that Malphus Reed was trying to gain wealth, which is not abnormal for the Izzet because they need funding and research. Sure. And based on things you know about certain absences, the source of that money could have been very, very tenuous.
Fair enough.
So what Moncho is trying to express is that to him, it seemed that Malphus Reed was trying to hedge his bets against the Izzet losing the rail war.
Now that Overshaw is dead, what will you do?
I still have investments in my buildings. I'm not going to lie to you. I think I'm about to get out of here for a little while.
Where can we find Halem Ward?
Halem Ward is in the Sixth Precinct. I think his foundry is set up in the smelting quarter.
The amount of resources it takes to move this much steel and technology. I know that you, Darius Vane, and Royston Overshaw were the main investors, but I can't imagine that you have that much liquid assets on hand. Who else has been funneling money into this project?
I would have thought that a member of your guild would have a little bit more of an understanding of the quantity of wealth men like me have. I'm in importing and exporting.
Insight.
My friend.
That's one.
Yeah, well, he's also like in importing and exporting. This isn't a lie. He has a lot of money. He is probably one of the top three richest independent citizens in Ravnica.
Cool.
Whose wealth may be only matched by people in the Orzhov.
Do you know if you've been building through Selesnya grounds?
We have not yet entered Selesnyan grounds. We are in the middle of contract negotiations. They seem to be rather open to the idea of us going through their territory and wanted to see our succession. They're not very big fans of, guild wars.
Why did those negotiations break down?
Because somebody tried to kill me.
Sure.
So we haven't had a chance to solve them yet, and now with the disappearance of Darius Vane and the subsequent squashing of Royston Overshaw, I can't imagine that that's going to finish.
We actually have seen this pattern before. This is what happened to the Boros line. There were Gruul saboteurs hired by Malphus Reed to stop construction, probably long enough to create a delay where they can put a sympathetic agent in power with the Boros and guide its construction correctly. And now we're seeing the exact same thing happen with a worm crushing the house of one of the major financiers. Vane is gone, so that's one pawn off the table.
Definitely not dead in his vault.
Definitely wasn't.
Definitely not starving to death in his vault. That's absolutely not what I'm claiming has happened.
Super bad.
Is this not a character?
Hold on. I think Andrew's actually discussing something really important. So let's give him some
And
focus.
We just... Now, they're not displaying any colors, no brands, no markings, no scarification, no piercings that would suggest membership within one of the certain clans. But they did end up using a big gatecrasher beast to get themselves onto the property. We know one of the only factions that has access to those things and uses them in any regular capacity are the Gruul. So again, we've got a piece of evidence that points us to the Gruul clans being used as proxies by the conspiracy to stop train line construction and eventually, I think, redirect it.
So maybe the Gruul are the good guys, or are they redirecting it into the glyph?
Well, the Gruul are just stopping construction. What right. happens after that, it's not their problem.
Okay.
As long as they get to destroy shit, they're happy.
Should we maybe talk to the Gruul? And by talk, I mean hit?
We might need to talk to the Gruul. If they are in contract negotiations with the Selesnya, we might want to talk to them too.
We can bring them the head of the gate beast. Gatecrasher beast. Big fucking thing that broke the door down.
Obviously, you all know something I don't. This seems to be something much bigger than all of us.
What is it you are chasing down, Collector?
I'm not at liberty to say, but I can give you a privilege that might answer some of your questions.
Sure.
He looks at Fakara. Our contract is not done yet, but if you come with me, we shall see. Do you know Tessa Karlov?
Yes.
No.
Maybe. The name's familiar. No.
Roll a history. Yeah. 13.
24.
Tesla. Yeah, that's the guy that made electricity, right?
God bless you, Sarah. Nope.
The electricity... college.
You know that she is a member of, I would say that Andrew and Ned definitely know that she's a member of the Orzhov. And, Ned, you remember specifically, for some reason, you're very recollective of the Maze Runner race, that she is rather high up in the Orzhov Guild. And, you seem to remember that she participated in the Maze Run.
She was a Maze Runner for the Orzhov?
Possibly.
Okay.
What does the Maze Runner have to do with this?
Saloran grips his Morning Star, stares down Perix, and says, "You will call her the Grand Envoy from this point on. Do you understand me?"
No. Why? I don't have to hold any authority to the Orzhov, just to be abundantly clear. I answer to many people, and I am happy to work with you.
Saloran smirks a bit and says, "You know, the human body has 206 bones. I've always wondered how many bones of a Dalkin has."
I just look at Xenia.
Xenia just shrugs.
Unclear.
Technically, it's all cartilage, so none of them are
bones.
So
are you suggesting that they follow you back to you-know-whom?
Yes. I believe that my contact at the Orzhov Syndicate has information that would be of great use to all of us. And obviously there are pieces of this puzzle that you four have somehow found out that I do not have. So, you are lucky enough to have an invitation to meet Tessa Karlov.
Yay. The person you were just talking
to. The Grand Envoy.
Yes, that I was looking for the words and I was asking what her official title was. You don't need to jump down my throat.
So, how do we feel? Are we off to go into Orzhov territory?
I, for one, would be delighted to meet the Grand Envoy in person.
I thought we were avoiding the Orzhov. Lovely time. Let's go.
All right. Saloran turns and steps out of the mansion.
Okay.
I step behind him, mocking his walk.
And you guys slowly, cautiously make your way towards the first precinct.
So while we're walking, let's summarize. We have a few avenues of investigation that we can follow up on. One is the Gruul. As we've already established, the Boros line and now the unaffiliated line have both been sabotaged by Gruul clan members, and now they've assassinated one of the major investors for the unaffiliated line. We have the Selesnian territory that they were about to build through, and conveniently construction was stopped right ahead of that.
Right.
It is worth talking to whatever Selesnian representative was responsible or involved with those negotiations and see what more we can learn.
Just remembered from season one. There's a fifth line, right? Like, we're talking about four train lines, but there are five lines of this glyph.
Yeah.
Okay, great.
Written on the map.
Right. There are five things making up the thing, and we don't know what the final one is.
Right. Great. There are five dashes making up the actual written spell.
Yeah. And we don't know what could possibly be forming the fifth part of the
glyph. You don't know
what
the fifth one is yet.
Great. Thank you.
True.
That's just like a thing that I forgot about until right now that I feel like is going to be very important.
True.
So we have Gruul investigation, you just said. We've got potentially chatting with the Selesnia to see what's been going on with the arrival of the unaffiliated line that's currently paused right at Selesnia territory. Mm-hmm. We technically have areas of investigation to talk about with, like, we still don't know all of the things we discovered in Malphus Reed's lair, what they pertain to, right? Like, we still do have a map with a bunch of circles. We don't know what it means. We have the... and then now that we're talking to the unaffiliated lines, we're going to the Orzhov. Like, this is actually technically a new mode of investigation.
Which we could turn to our advantage if we're able to convince Tessia Karlov or someone who's sympathetic to her cause to buy out the remaining shares of the unaffiliated line. And then we have the power of an entire guild, which is backing the construction and the direction of the unaffiliated line. And we can ensure, or they can ensure, that the spell will not be written, at least with that line.
And right now, we don't... The Orzhov, as we understand it, are not involved in the rail war.
At all.
Correct?
Correct.
As we understand
it? As you understand it, the Orzhov are not involved with the rail war.
Great.
But what if it goes further than the guilds? Like, it goes higher up than the guilds?
What's higher up than the guilds?
What's higher up than the guilds?
I don't know.
The guilds run Ravnica. The guild leaders are a collective council.
Right. But if someone's running a scam on all of the guilds in order to make these rail lines, who is that person?
Sure. That is part of the question, yes.
Yeah.
For sure.
Who the other conspirators?
Who are the conspirators at Malphus Reed level? Right, we have Daereth and we have potentially others that we know of because of, was it Ludmilla? That was her name?
Yeah.
The Gorgon? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Ludmilla said there were others, Daereth specifically in the Golgari. So we know that they exist and we don't
know
who they
are. Those who are not required to take the black.
Yes, exactly. So those are other things we have to just sort of keep in mind as we're gathering information. Okay. To the Orzhov. Sup, Collector?
So as you guys are conversing about your current situation, strategizing what could possibly be going on inside the mind of your dungeon master, you head basically southward to Precinct 1, where is the resting place of Orzhova, the Grand Basilica of the Orzhov Guild. Now, down on the southern side of Precinct 1 is what's known as the Ghost Quarter, where a bunch of lingering souls tend to populate the mists. And down in Precinct 1, even though it's where the Chamber of the Guild Pact is, it's where, you know, a lot of really important congregations happen, the land over Orzhova seems to be perpetually overcast. It's a very grim, gothic design. Everything is sort of black and looks expensive yet foreboding at the same time. And it's clear that the Orzhov wealth is ever-present because the Orzhov very much like to wear their wealth. So as you make your way toward, you start to see that where the collector's gaudy visage might have stood out a little bit in particular areas, he tends to just sort of blend in here as a myriad of priests and soldiers and debt collectors mill about on the streets, even late in this evening. And there are also peasants and debtors who are sort of lingering around and praying and begging for absolvence. Occasionally you see a skittering thrall or two, these small, really creepy looking pygmy gray creatures that wear these expensive gold masks and half masks, but for the rest of the part might be naked except for like loincloths. They're very sort of these weird personal attendants that follow some of the wealthy Orzhov around. And you make your way south past the actual basilica around towards the back end to what's known as Plaza West, which is a very, very wealthy district in Ravnica as well that many Orzhovian citizens reside in, where it's a place of expensive properties for those within the guild or those that might have direct business within the guild who can afford these places. And it doesn't take long to spot through the rippling streets that there is one manor that is far bigger and greater than all the others. And you kind of feel like you left one area to kind of walk into the same area as this towering, menacing, gothic manor stretches out before you, and it is the manor of the Karlov family. And as the collector leads you forward, there's no restrictions, there's no wait, there's no announcing. Everybody seems to recognize him very clearly as he marches you straight through into the front area. And there's a small thrall that greets you at the doorway, and he just sort of, you know, David, you just kind of wave this thing aside as it sort of quivers and bows away out of your presence as you march straight back through the manor to what is clearly a private meeting room of the Karlov family. And he announces himself to the room, and you hear a very quiet but very powerful voice beckon you in from the outside. And you open the door and you see two people inside. Now, I think for Tessa, she was a little bit surprised because nobody announced you. So nobody announced the fact that you were marching in with four people from other guilds. So there's a bit of a shock as you open the door as she greets you and she says, "Ah, Saloran." And then she looks at the four of you, and sitting in this room with her, Tessa herself is a fairly tall woman. She herself is lame. She has a cane. You can see her kind of leaning awkwardly because one of her legs is lame, but that doesn't, she has countered that lameness and to adjust her posture in a way that she still exhibits wealth and power and status. And she's gorgeously dressed in a very, very expensive casual robe. And sitting next to her in what can only be described as resplendence is clearly a Boros knight, who's sitting in the room with her in armor that literally glistens as if it was made of golden fire. And he is mid-sip of a tea when he kind of gets discovered as he is. And there's a brief moment of pause as she didn't expect you to show up with them.
Well, this is quite a surprise.
Grand Envoy, please forgive my boldness. I've discovered some information that I think would be urgent for you to hear.
Yes, quite so, I imagine. May we address the serious matter at hand in that, who are these?
This is the moment where Saloran realizes he messed up. Because he does not know their names. So trying to save face, he turns to them as if it's their fault, and then beckons them to speak for themselves.
Do I recognize the gentleman she's with?
It's Tajik the Invincible.
I immediately, like, while he's whatever, I drop the knee to Tajik.
Yep.
That's just what happens.
He kind of stands up immediately and is kind of difficult to assess the thing. And he kind of looks at the room and he kind of judges. And he, "My dear, hold on one moment." And he sort of saunters over past the crowd and he addresses you.
"Soldier, what is your name and rank?"
"Private Thakar Odrun, sir."
"Ah, of the Odrun lineage. I see."
"Yes, sir."
"I think I knew your grandfather. Rather tough minotaur."
"Very much so, sir. I still carry his maces."
"Stand at attention, soldier."
"Yes, sir."
"Are these people with you?"
"Three of them, yes."
And he kind of like reaches down around your waist and just sort of like, you know, he doesn't take it, but he just sort of like fingers the horn and like looks at it. And he's like,
"I see. I think these ones are okay, Tessa. My name is Tajik of the Boros Legion. And if you are here with this soldier of mine and she carries a penance horn, I think they are okay. Please, come in."
And he very, like, casually beckons you in. But it's like, the thing about Tajik is, you may have heard the name before, and the suspicion is that he is so casual because he is invincible. Like, rumor is that this man is quite literally invincible. And even though he's very casual and very calm, you all get the sense that he could destroy everyone in this room.
Is he also a human with Maze Runner background?
Yes, he was the Maze Runner for the Boros.
For the Boros.
And technically, he won the race.
Why do you say technically?
Because the ending did not happen the way that everyone thought it happened.
Got it.
Yes.
Just to clarify, Ned asked if he was human.
He is human.
Okay.
He is a human with olive skin and very bright eyes and a very thick accent with a black goatee. And that he has this insane sword. It's like up to his neck and it's got like a big wavy blade to it. And it like
the little,
little blue flames like come out of it at different points and stuff. It's awesome. It's like the Tournesol from like Final Fantasy. Like, that's what it looks like.
Oh my god, so cool.
Yeah, it's a kind of a big deal that he's here.
Lorzach is quietly appraising the relationship between Tessia and Tajik.
Yep.
And who this man is to invite strangers into her home.
Yep.
Perix is suppressing a smile.
Perix is supremely uncomfortable and is staying as far to the outskirts as he can do.
So, Tessa addresses you, who you have now heard that his name is Salorin. So, David / Salorin / the Collector.
Slash?
Everybody kind of comes in and there's really no place for you to lounge because there's only two chairs and a small table, which they have occupied. Tessa sits back down using her cane because she prefers to be seated for her own, you know, condition. But Tajik remains standing and she sort of comfortably sits down and she goes, "Well, my collector, what is it you have learned?"
"Not our names."
"Wasn't talking to you, my dear."
"Respect."
"Grand Envoy, I've learned that the fourth and unaffiliated rail line, two of the three main investors, Darius Vane and Royston Overshaw, have been murdered. The last one, Cyril Montjoy, we went to his home and he was under attack by what seemed to be Gruul soldiers." And Saloran lowers his voice. "In my four oars of regalia, they stopped for a moment. I do believe that our suspicions are correct. I do believe that someone is furthering their own ambitions, as it were."
"I've heard about the worm attack. However, I have not yet received information that Mr. Montjoy's estate was overtaken. Are we quite sure that they were Gruul?"
"No. They bore no outward allegiances, no distinguishing features to identify them as such. However, they were within the company of one Gatecrasher Beast, seen commonly among the Gruul clans."
"Gatecrasher Beasts can be bought. My True. Dear collector, what is it I have mentioned to you about assumptions?"
"Assumptions can lead to an early grave, Grand Envoy."
"If I send you out to collect information, I need actual information. But I do appreciate your efforts, and I think we have actually made some progress. Now, the question is, who are the four of you?"
"Grand Envoy, my name is Lorzach Rotspeaker."
She actually perks up at your incredibly sincere, honorific expression.
"He has no title. He has no other epithets to his name. He simply introduces himself, offers a bow, and then sort of scuttles
she
backward."
She will take note that you are Golgari and probably will have more concern talking to you.
Used to it.
Yeah. She will talk to you and she will say, "Yes, your names are very politely given. My question remains, why are you in the company of my agent?"
"Mostly because he has insisted upon a favor from our Boros companion you see before you."
"I see."
"You didn't know that cows could actually make nervous smiles until now."
And Tajik is just going to lean over and ask the question directly to Tessa, but sort of also ask the question to you as to whether or not this Boros soldier is indebted to the Orzhov in any way.
"Yes, sir. When I was at Royston Overshaw's manor, I found one of their party near death. This soldier of yours entered a contract with me to save his life. So there is a debt here that has not been paid yet."
"Please be a good thing. Please be a good thing. Please be a good thing. Please be a good thing."
"And what is the conditions of this contract?"
"It's to help me fulfill my mission to my lady."
That seems like a rather steep exchange. And he kind of looks over at Tessa, and Tessa kind of looks back at him, and she says, I can't. As an advocate, my collector, I must insist at the suggestion of my colleague that we find a way to terminate this contract a little bit more succinctly.
As you wish. And Saloran turns to Fakara and gives a gesture and says, the bounds of the contract are complete. Thank you for your honor.
Thank you for saving Perix. We would not have been insane without him.
Saloran takes note of the sincerity in Fakara's voice.
Well, this is all very, very charming, but we have a serious situation here on hand. Tessa, I don't mean to pry, but our meeting has been sort of interrupted here. And she turns to Tajik and very quietly pretends to have a private moment, but you can tell that she's saying it loud enough to hear as to question of whether or not you guys should be involved and how much she possibly trusts the Boro soldier in the room. And he points to the horn on her waist as everyone in the table looks to Fakara.
I must admit a bit of ignorance as to the exact nature of the horn. I've met its inhabitant, but she did not seem very friendly.
Ah, I see. Well, I do imagine that the particulars of a penance horn are probably not something that we talk about in the academy. But you have blown it, and you have met its...
occupant?
We use a different term, but it's probably not the nicest thing to say. I will be clear. The penance horn is a shackle, so to say, for angels who have, according to Parhelion, they have misbehaved.
Oh.
And therefore lose certain abilities within their angelic council and therefore must serve penance. And we find that the best way for them to do that is to serve under lesser soldiers who still remember what it is to be dutiful.
Oh.
Yes, so for limited times, you have a responsibility to set this angel on her rightful path. You may summon her and command her to do dutiful things in the name of the Boros.
Wow.
Yes, but the fact that you are able to blow it and that it, something very good happened is a good indication that you are worthy of possessing the item. So, my dear Tessa, I don't think we have anything to fear. Are these men your compatriots?
Yes.
Ah. Excellent. I think we're okay. And he kind of gives this, like, smile, and he has this sort of, like, freakishly white teeth that shine very brightly beneath his dark olive skin and his dark black goatee in a way that just says, oh, you guys all just got roped into something terrible. Tace is going to play the point of advantage here and try and convince you to explain to her exactly what you were doing heading over to the mansion of Royston Overshaw. What could an independent man of Royston Overshaw possibly hold interest in the four of you? A Golgari and a Boros and an Izzet. Oh, and I heard there was a great deal of commotion recently at Sonnet 4.
I feel like you already have an answer to your question.
Well, I have several answers. I'm just trying to figure out which one is correct.
Overshaw was one of the major financiers of the unaffiliated line.
Yes.
He very graciously supplied a train to a compatriot of ours. And as we understand it, the unaffiliated line is but one part of a much larger design that is being written upon the face of Ravnica. And we were hoping to uncover from Mr. Overshaw exactly who commands its construction.
That is very interesting.
More specifically, who directs its construction? Who is the person in charge of deciding exactly on what path it falls?
Well, we've had suspicions of our own and haven't reached a very good conclusion, I'm afraid to tell you. I think now is a fair time to admit, well, as you know, I can't actually say it out loud, if you would please, Collector. If I say it out loud, I will summon them. So please, if you would like to tell them.
Of course, my lady. The Obsidat.
Yes. And Tajik kind of introduces. The Baroness has designs to overthrow the Obsidat.
And take her rightful place.
We feel that as the Grand Envoy, that she spends most of her time doing all the work in the first place, and dead men perhaps should not be ruling anymore. And by some crazy incident, I've decided that this is a good idea.
Do the rest of the Boros fall in line with your line of thinking, sir?
Well, it's not exactly something that's up for debate, but let's say it's not necessarily a hush-hush situation, but the less people know, the more likely we are for success.
Ah, yes.
Why are you telling us this?
Tessa speaks up and says, well, because I am under the fear that the Orzhov is somehow involved in the fourth rail line.
Ah.
I sent my collector to investigate whether or not any of the three financiers had hidden debts with the Obsidot. I do believe something is happening, but they seem to be playing this one very close to the chest. When things exist in the Orzhov community, and I am not directly involved in them, it spells bad news for one way or another. The Obsidot, the Ghost Council, are a bunch of fat old dead men who don't do any work. I am the Grand Envoy in name, and I must do everything. So when things happen that I haven't done, that means they don't want me doing them. Which is not a very good trait for lazy people. We were trying to figure out whether or not any of the financiers had hidden debts.
What could the Orzhov possibly have that the Gruul clans want for themselves?
Well, fundamentally, the Gruul and the Orzhov couldn't exactly be more opposite. We tend to value material wealth because it's true power, and the Gruul seem to just want to destroy everything because they don't like city life. I suppose on the grandest situation, the Orzhov control property, and the Gruul could destroy said property, but that's not exactly, destroyed property doesn't earn money.
What if it had something to do with the dead of the Gruul? The ghosts of their warriors, somehow?
For one to have concern over honor, they must have honor. The Gruul are savages.
Well, everyone fights for something.
Tajik speaks up. That is a bit unfair. I spent a great deal of my career fighting the Gruul, and they are savage, yes, but honorful, also true. They fight fairly, as opposed to certain other people like the Dimir or the Rakdos. They never fight fair, but the Gruul will match you strength for strength.
Respectfully, Grand Envoy, destroying property has a great deal of value for whoever wants it destroyed.
Yes, well put.
Then it would seem to follow that...
I will say this quite clearly. The Gruul tend to not have anything of value to put up as collateral. They tend not to take deals and loans from the Orzhov.
Then it would stand to reason that the Orzhov are more likely to be able to pressure the Selesnians.
We have considered that as an option. They certainly had a great deal of rebuilding to be done after the incident with Mott Selesnya, the shattering of the guild pact such a long time ago. They have been rather starved for resources.
Enough so that they would be willing to assassinate a stranger with one worm in order to forgive the outstanding debt?
Well, the other question that I think you've already come to is, wouldn't they have profited from leasing their land to the rail line?
I believe the answer to be yes.
So the question here is, who would so badly want to kill the financiers that they would actually go through with it? Given the fact that the rail war is really seemingly between three guilds, that the fourth independent line is going to exist regardless of what happens to the rail war, who cared so much about preventing an independent from existing in the first place? Or who wanted control?
That's my question. It feels like someone's trying to stop those in power of the fourth rail line in order to have control over its own operation.
Could it be the Azorius?
You have three wealthy people who are funding a project. If you remove all three of them, you remove the funding.
Project ceases.
How does that give you control over the project? Because my theory was that one of them was secretly owing debts and therefore was being strong-armed by the Obsidot, but I don't know that we've actually determined that to be true. I think a particularly good line of thought would be to investigate whoever possibly could have summoned that worm.
Which would lead us to the door of the Selesnians.
Well, there is one Selesnian you may want to talk to, and I don't think you're going to like where she lives.
What, did they live in the Undercity along with the Gorgons?
Oh no, quite strangely, she lives back in Ovitzia.
Oh.
Rich people, man. Perix then realizes he says it out loud and gets real awkward.
Lorzat, she kind of looks and sees your face and she says, I know. It might make more sense when you go and meet her.
We'll see what type of temperament she's in.
Who?
There is an elven woman named Damara Tendris who lives up in the mansion quarter, high up in the Selesnian Guild, but she no longer resides in Vitugazi. I suggest you go bang on her door and see if she has anything to say for it. She seems to be quite open about the involvements of her guild, and she certainly was very adamant about helping me trying to forge the temporary guild pack in the absence of the one that currently exists. She is very thought-forward.
Grand Envoy, if you will, do you by chance know of anyone or anything named Merit Lage?
Honestly, my dear, I have never heard that name before.
Thank you.
24 insight.
She's never heard it.
Okay.
She questions the name, though. And who is Merit Lage?
We don't know.
It may be some sort of rubric. One of the main conspirators working with the Izzet line and who knows how many others had it painted across a laboratory. The name Merit Lage.
I will look into it, but for now perhaps we should find out who is in control of that worm.
Agreed.
I suggest you march your way back to Vizia.
Thank you very much, Grand Envoy.
Grand Envoy, thank you so much for speaking with us. We are very, very fatigued. Would there be any chance that we could take advantage of your obvious hospitality and rest for the evening, please?
Yes, of course.
You can almost hear Saloran's teeth grinding in his skull.
Because even you can't stay here. You gotta go back to where you reside. She's very clear that she's going to summon you again in the morning.
Great. Grand Envoy, before I go, there is a Vidalcan engineer by the name of Halen Ward that seems to have been heavily involved in this fourth rail line.
Yes, he seems to be making a great deal of choices as far as the construction.
If it isn't too much trouble, we would like the opportunity to join any inquests made as to his activities.
My lady, I certainly do not need any interlopers into our business. I'm perfectly capable of working on this on my own.
That thus far does not seem to be true.
Teeth grinding intensifies.
We shall speak. Thank you. We shall speak on it in the morning. Please report back here at first light.
Your words, my soul.
Ooh, take inspiration for that. Ooh, I got tingly.
So we're still in the room for the moment?
Yeah. Yes.
Because I'd really love to ask Tajik if he has any stories of my grandfather.
Yeah. Remind me again, your grandfather was like a soldier though, right? He was not he was not a war drummer. He was just like a regular soldier.
Yeah. As far as I think. Yeah.
So he reminds you of a tale. He reminds you of the chaos after the severing of the guild pact that he and your grandfather grew up in, that your grandfather was probably very young and around during the times, and that a lot of people relied on your grandfather after the shattering of the guild pact because they needed men who were prepared for wartime during times of peace. And he talks about times that they've spent together. Tajik really kind of tore himself, cut his teeth on calming down a lot of gruel war raiding parties that kind of ran rampant after the shattering of the gruel pact, where they just sort of started assaulting everything because there was nothing preventing them from doing so. So while he wasn't in your grandfather's company, your grandfather was known because he was a guy who grew up in peacetime, ready for war. And so when the guild pact shattered, he was one of the guys that people rallied around as far as remembering what it meant to have to be a wartime soldier. He seems to have a lot of really, really nice things to say about your grandfather. The Ordruin line is very well respected within the Boros. And I say that from a lore perspective.
Right.
The Ordruin line is very, very well respected within the Boros. And they are often tasked with a lot of civil duties because they just have a really, really polite and quality temperament.
No pressure.
No pressure. And as you're kind of walking out, Xenia, he also kind of grabs you and very quietly kind of just
leans in quietly and he says, how do you feel about the rupturing within your guild right now?
Honestly, very uncomfortable.
Hmm. Did you know Malphus Reed?
Not personally, but I knew of him, of course.
Yes. Are you familiar with the War Mind Initiative?
I'm not.
When I was younger, I was in charge of the War Mind Initiative, which was it was an effort to collaborate with the Izzet to build war machines, weapons, research and development. I would look into it. If you are here with these people investigating what we are investigating, I cannot pry, but I would say I would look into the War Mind Initiative.
Thank you, Tajik.
You're very welcome. Again, that sort of like smile that's like, wow, that's so bright and radiant. But at the same time, it's like a lion smile. Like, I'm so confident because I can't be hurt. Like, yeah. I win every fight.
If he gets too hungry, he's going to eat our ears.
Yep.
I mean, Zenny is perfectly dazzled by it because it's so sparkly.
Yep. And so you guys take a long rest.
Thank God.
And so, after a fantastic meal, your items are collected for washing, and some servants are going to usher you guys down to each of your private rooms. You will get a chance to sleep alone without the snoring of your companions. And you are led into these magnificent chambers with big, fluffy beds and pillows and chairs in a bedroom, because why would they need them, and salons and dressers and all sorts of ornate, absolutely gorgeous, magnificent, very expensive furniture. And you all get a chance to have a private bath, and you lay your heads down on these incredibly comfortable sheets. And as the night rolls in and you close your eyes and try and get the best long rest your DM's going to allow, in your loneliness, in the darkness, all you can think on before sleep takes you is the black. On the next Encounter Party, back to Ovizia as our players hunt for the secretive member of the Selesnya Conclave. The Nature Guild has been strangely absent in the current events. A startling discovery will shatter the very bounds of comprehension. Next time on Encounter Party! Encounter Party is produced by Play Plus One and Charging Moose Media, based on the worlds of Dungeons & Dragons and Magic the Gathering, created by Wizards of the Coast. Original campaign written by Brian David Judkins. Sound capture and original effects by Will Malones. Edits and mixing by Ned Donovan and Katie Brow. Theme song and additional music by Alexander Nakarada of Serpent Sound Studios. Additional music by Kevin McLeod of Incompetech. Special thanks to Megan Judkins and Will Malones.
Good evening. This is Lozach Rotspeaker. You know, most people throughout history are dead. And someday, you will be too. Or will you? Find out by joining the Golgari Swarm and find your secret to a life everlasting. Join our Facebook discussion group for all the behind-the-scenes looks at what's happening with Encounter Party. Find us on Twitter and Instagram as well. For news and updates, go to encounterparty.com. And let's keep this party going.